Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari American, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Everybody, welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast for Monday, August 3rd. I'm Jeff Erickson. This podcast is brought to you by the folks at Dynasty Owner. Thank you for sponsoring us. We'll hear from them a little bit later in the draft. I'm here with Chris Liss, as we're always going to be doing the Monday podcast, and hopefully soon we'll have stuff on the football field to react to. Now it's more opt-outs and contracts right now. Chris, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing all right, man. Just good. Looking at this stuff, you were asking me about which guys I'd switched around, and I'm looking at my list now.
Yeah, and that's going to be the theme for today's show. After we get through some of the news and notes, obviously the big overriding theme is positive COVID tests and people opting out. A lot of both. So wanted to get into that right away, Chris. We'll start off, and injury notes too. You know, there's a lot of that going on too, but In fact, the first one I want to start off with was Rashad Penny going on the PUP list. You know, he had that gruesome knee injury. Pete Carroll had said that Penny will report to training camp on Friday. Attending a camp and actually practicing are two different things. You know, he's coming back from a torn ACL. Chris Carson's coming back from a hip injury. I still see like a reason for hope for having Rashad Penny at some point.
Yeah, I mean, there's a chance PUP regular season, which is week 6, 7, 8,
right,
come back, and then, but it might be good timing too, right? If he's really back and healthy, and Chris Carson's fumbled or gotten dinged up, could be perfect timing, right? I mean, a lot of times you win your league not because you have the guy who's the running back three, but you have the guy who averaged 20 points a game for four key weeks, and Penny's right. A candidate to be that later in the year.
Yeah, I think that's right. And so maybe, and one of the, I think it's a best ball or even in a, one of those deep no pickup leagues, or a sporadic pickup league, like a cut line, maybe that's where you take a chance on him, a draft champion sort of format. You know, I think in leagues where you have weekly pickups, I probably wouldn't bother especially because, you know, if you're going to have like four or five bench spots or even six, I probably wouldn't bother. But in a deeper league, I might, you know, because Carlos Hyde actually is also banged up a little bit in his own right. You know, he's got he's coming back from a torn labrum in his shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, and also Carlos Hyde is not really an obstacle if Penny comes back fully healthy, I don't think. I mean, he probably could be made into an obstacle because that's what coaches do. But Penny's first-round pick a couple of years ago, and he's looked the part when he's gotten a chance.
Right. That's right. And so that's why, yeah, you pay, you know, that's why you kind of like want to pay attention to that. I want to think that that might be a big deal. But at any rate, I just thought I'd bring him up. You know, Seattle wants to run the ball a ton. That's not going to change. You know, they might. The only thing that might change things is if somehow they get behind early. But, you know, after going and making the big trade for at Jamal Adams, you know, you think that their defense is going to be a little bit stronger. That's one of the reasons it allows them to kind of run their offense the way they'd like to run it.
Yeah, I think they'll I think they're still going to they're still going to pound the ball no matter what. I think Russell Wilson is sort of that ace in the hole that they always count on late in the games, even if they are trailing, to say, okay, didn't work, so let's let Russell Wilson take over. Oh, we won the game. What a brilliant strategy we had.
Right. That's right. So, yeah, that's just one little note there. Big news that happened over the weekend. Antonio Brown, they finally got a decision on him. He's going to be suspended for the first 8 games for violating the personal conduct penalty. It will begin September 5th, run through week 8 of the regular season, or his team's 8th game, assuming he signs with the team. So, you know, that opens the door for someone to sign him if they want to. If he goes unsigned, though, then you probably don't get anything all year from him.
Right. I mean, I think you draft him, and if he's not signed pretty quick, you drop him. You know, you're hoping that somebody signs him early, and, you know, at least you know what you have. I think you still drop him if you need to, even if he does sign with the team. I mean, he's 32, and he's going to come to a new team and have to get up to speed. And it's not like a sure thing right now. But if you're in the NFFC, you got a 10-man bench, you could take a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't yet. Haven't found myself taking that chance on him. But, yeah, at least you have certainty. At least you know. I mean, that was one of the things. It could be a year. It could be 3 games. Now at least that we have that certainty there a little bit. And so do teams. I think – you know, he was at, and his reaction was good for once. He was like, okay, I'm willing to, you know, I'll put in the work. You know, I'm grateful for getting another opportunity. So said all the right things after that came down, at least.
He says all the right things all the time, and then he says all the wrong things the
like
next 24
day. Hours later.
Yeah, he's just really, it's not, you know, the thing about Antonio Brown is if you've ever seen like the videos of him working out, like he works like a maniac. Like it's not like it's no accident that he is a Hall of Fame level receiver, despite being 5'10", 185 with mediocre time speed. I mean, he works like a maniac. And so even Brady was impressed by his work ethic. So, you know, he's a little bit out there, but if he ever does commit, it's like they think, oh, he doesn't care about football or whatever. No, some of those guys who have screw loose, like it's not just that like they'll do something outlandish on the side, but when they're doing the thing they're doing, no one's more focused. You know, Dennis Rodman or one of those guys, like no one's more focused than those guys.
Right.
So it cuts both ways.
Well, that was one of the things like the Last Dance, the Jordan Bowles documentary, they said the same thing about Rodman, that when he was focused, he was hyper-focused. He was really, you know, he was really good about that. And, you know, he took his craft super seriously and all that. And, you know, they had high praise for him. It's just he wasn't always there.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, everyone's got their situation in life. And everybody, even the most, you know, seemingly well-adjusted person has got their issues to deal with. And everyone deals with them differently. But, you know, genius and madness kind of are a fine line. So sometimes a guy who's just outlandishly great at something, partly because he's a little crazy.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, that's one of those where, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the upside is still so high. If it works out, he signs with the right team and he comes back on time after that. But I'll probably wait until he actually signs with someone.
The problem is, like, if he just can't control himself, it's just not worth it for anybody. It's just, if he just can't, but he did control himself in Pittsburgh for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was a huge part of that team and he never really heard a lot about it until the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's right. And the funny thing, you know, so the question is, did he control himself? Did Tomlin control him? You know, it's kind of a paternalistic narrative when you think about it. I don't know if that's a fair critique.
You know,
or not.
Coaches, I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of their relationship, but coaches matter. You know, coaching is important. It's not just like a lot of coaches are just idiots. They just inflame the situation. They throw the player under the bus to the media. They handle it completely wrong at every turn. Mm-hmm. And you have a volatile guy, and other coaches are a little bit better at relating to the guy, seeing what it is that's bothering him that is legitimate. Most, you know, fly off the handle things are like they're based on a legitimate grievance. It's just handled wrong. And they address the grievance. They extract some sort of commitment and promise from the guy, and, you know, they make it work. But sometimes it's not possible, too. Sometimes the guy's just too determined to screw it up, and it's hard to know in advance.
Yeah, that's right. So that's
remember, Belichick couldn't control him in New England.
Yeah, but that was kind of end game sort of stuff, you know. Like at that point he had already run the course with the Raiders. He was already careening off the tracks, you know.
Right. He might have been in sort of. You're right, and he didn't have like any, you know, roots with the Patriots. And Belichick's kind of a hard ass and like, you know, aloof, and so. It might have just been like, all right, we took a chance.
And not only that, like Belichick didn't have like a whole lot invested in him either.
No.
So it's easy for him to say, screw this, I'm done.
Yeah, right. And the Patriot way is more powerful than one, you know, volatile, talented player.
Yeah, that's right. So that's probably, that's probably the take there. You know, passage of time sometimes helps people too. You know, that and, you know, actually maybe real help. Resolve a lot of problems that have been kind of hanging over him a little bit there, and maybe he can get those resolved and he's a lot better off. So we'll see. All right. Enough about him. Want to move on. This is something we talked about, you know, may not make like big headlines, but Juwan James, opted out for the season for the Denver Broncos, starting offensive tackle, you know, 28 years old, in the prime of his career. He opted out for COVID-19 concerns. The opt-out deadline is Wednesday, so I wouldn't be surprised if we see a few more opt-outs coming along the way. Yes, he's been mulling this for a week or so. He was supposed to start right tackle for the Broncos. You got a young quarterback. At least he wasn't slated to protect his blind side, but still, pretty big deal. And one thing we're talking about in the XM show is like sometimes guards are known as the run blockers, tackles as the pass blockers. I would say the other thing is blindside tackle is definitely a pass blocker. You know, forward side one might be more, you know, kind of more on the run, things of that nature. Still, did you downgrade Drew Lock, Melvin Gordon, anybody else based on this news?
No, not really, because they're low enough already. If I had them higher, I would probably have downgraded them, but Locke is like my 20 something QB, so it's like, do I really want to move Rivers up ahead of him when I think the Colts are going to run 1,000 times? Probably not. The weapons are still good, and it's one right tackle, but it's not good. I think it's more like if you're getting him at like 23 or whatever, you're getting him, okay, fine. It's just that the case for an easy, you know, it just makes the upside a little harder to see. Just a slightly.
I'd say that's right. I'd say that that's kind of, it's granted. And it's the thing is, you're not investing a lot in Drew Lock anyhow, for the most part. I've seen some people that were bigger on him. But for the most part, it's what you do with Gordon, what you do with the wide receiver options. You know, you got a rookie, a bunch of young wide receivers. That might be a problem. A little bit there, but for the most part,
I have Lock at 27 actually, behind Rivers. He's just had a Bridgewater and Haskins.
Okay,
so there's really nowhere to move him.
Yeah, and because he's going to play. You know, that's the one thing. He doesn't have any. You know, they didn't sign Cam Newton. They didn't sign any. You know, Philip Rivers or any veterans.
Should have signed Cam Newton.
They absolutely should have. Absolutely, I think they should have, but they did not. So,
well, if Locke turns out to be good, the thing is, like, if you have a young QB that you think might, you know, even has a 20% chance to be a top 10 QB, which I think is fair, that's not that high, then, you know, you don't want to screw that up by, you know, you basically signing Cam Newton, it's like, we'll see if it was just a ploy by Belichick, but if he plays like Stidham or if it were Locke, you don't easily recover from that. You know, it's like you just lose like your starting job and all the reps with the starters and the practice reps. And it's a horrible blow to your career to have, you know, a former MVP veteran come in. It's not just like a minor thing like, oh, we'll just sign Cam and then we'll take a look at Locke next year. Like, no, that's, you're putting like a good, there's a good chance that you've closed the book on him.
Right. Yeah, that's right. So, yeah. All right. That's what I want to talk about with those guys. Before we move on, let's do a little bit of business with our friends at Dynasty Owner. They've been sponsoring the podcast for us this month and really wanted to thank them for that. We've been looking for a new challenge, which is why we got Jerry Donabedian and Joe Bartel are playing in the Dynasty Owner Fantasy Football program this season. Dynasty Owner Fantasy Football unites the fun and excitement of fantasy football with the skill and strategy of the front office. Dynasty Owner is the only way to play fantasy football with real NFL salaries, adding the strategy of running an NFL franchise. Dynasty Owner provides a unique challenge for the diehard fantasy football fanatics. Go to dynastyowner.com/rotowire. Leagues are forming now. That's dynastyowner.com/rotowire. We've all been in a league where the winner just got lucky. If you're like us and know better than most, Dynasty Owner gives you the platform to prove it. Dynasty Owner favors skilled players who can manage their roster using real NFL salaries within the salary cap. It adds an entirely new level of strategy. Go to dynastyowner.com/rotowire. Validate your fantasy football skills. That's dynastyowner.com/rotowire. Dynasty Owner, start your dynasty today. All right, let's go over some of the other COVID testing positives, some of the opt-outs, and then we'll get on to the meat of the day, which is movers on your rankings. Quickly, a couple guys that, you know, that happened over the weekend. The Lions, they already had Kenny Galladay test positive, but they added Matthew Stafford and TJ Hockenson to the list. We spent some time on XM talking about them. Want to talk about them here real quick. Hockenson's a guy you and I both kind of like, especially if you're waiting on tight ends. You get like someone like him and Noah Font or Irv Smith, kind of get two of those guys as opposed to paying up for a tight end.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like him specifically. I mean, I like him. He's the eighth overall pick and came out of the gate really strong last year, although I think it was against the Cardinals that he had his He had his massive game. But this is should be, you know, pedigree-wise an elite tight end. Year two is a little early for a tight end to truly break out. It's usually three or four for them, but the top guys can go in year two. And almost nobody does anything as a rookie. So I like him. He was pretty beat up last year, though, and now he's also sick, or I don't know if he's actually sick, but he's got the virus. But I'm not too worried about the COVID thing. I mean, I said this like 10 times. I just, for these guys, the shape they're in, the age they are, I'm not saying there's no possibility of something bad. Obviously, Eduardo Rodriguez, that was a serious thing. Can't deny that. But that most of them are going to just get right through it, bounce right back. And is there a long-term issue? Maybe. That's a good reason not to play since we don't know what the long-term implications are. But I think in the short term, if these guys aren't crazy sick, and even if they're a little sick, and they get back, I am not downgrading these guys at all.
Yeah, and that's some of the thing. Like, yeah, there are some players with pre-existing conditions, but honestly, the NFL is kind of Darwinian in that it weeds out people.
Exactly.
Where they're, say they're extremely asthmatic or they have heart conditions. Well, a lot of times you can't play. Anyhow, universally true, but it's hard enough to get in.
Well, the NFL has more fat guys, right? I mean, you can be kind of fat and play, certain positions in the NFL. And baseball has some fat pitchers, I guess, but fat DHs. But like, anybody who's playing like cornerback, safety, wide receiver, running back, those guys are in tip-top shape.
Yeah, and even the linemen, like, if you can't breathe, I mean, you're taking a pounding. You know, it's hard to be able to continue with that. If you have heart conditions, well, I mean, that's a real problem.
Think sumo wrestler, though. You know, like I think of the offensive linemen, kind of like sumo wrestlers. Like, those guys are fat as hell, but they're strong as hell too, right? I mean, they're incredibly strong, and the fat like gives you just more mass, like a bigger base from which to push. You didn't get into fights when you were a kid, but I used to fight, and the fat kid was always strong. And so, you know, that's what these sumo wrestlers are like. Guys like 400 pounds, he's giving you a hard shove. I mean, you're going to fall down. And I think some of these guys, I mean, a lot of these linemen are even now like in better shape than you'd even realize. Like they run and work out and stuff. But, you know, they're just carrying more fat. They eat a lot of calories. Their metabolisms are stretched a little bit more. So I don't know. I could see a lot of these guys just being like, you know, it's – and then and even no matter how healthy they are, you don't know any long-term effects. We just don't know. But if a guy's playing this year and he's got COVID and he's not super symptomatic, he's got, you know, mild symptoms, I'm not concerned.
Okay. That's good. There are other the other one is Gardner Minshew. Again, if not concerned, well, you wouldn't be concerned with him either, though there is a little bit maybe more time.
He might have gotten some extra COVID into the mustache, though, and so it's more dangerous for him. He might have entrapped some of the particles. No, he's quarterbacks in the NFL. You could be a little fat and be quarterback. Wasn't like Byron Leftwich a little chubby? Like, you could be a little chunky and play QB, couldn't you? Like, if you're a pocket passer.
Yeah, it usually doesn't work out that well at that level. You need the mobility to get, you know. I'm sure it's happened a few guys.
You have quick feet, though. You could still be, you know. What was that guy who was 300 pounds?
Yeah, he's dead. Jared Lorenzen, you're talking about, right?
Yeah, he's dead. Yeah, okay. He's dead. But that's neither here nor there, Jeff. He was like 300-pound quarterback. So you can be a large quarterback.
Yeah, but he did pass away recently. So,
but not COVID-related.
No, not COVID-related. Just life-related. Yeah, unfortunately there. Okay, big opt-outs. Nate Solder, huge for you. Huge. Could impact Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley. I know you're not a huge fan of him, or at least the sign didn't work out, but it's one less guy in the chain.
It's one less guy in the chain, but it's also like the time, you know, it's like you pay a guy a bunch of money and you've got to see it through if you're the team. But I don't know that he was better than their replacement by a lot. And I feel like it was time to move on. They drafted three offensive linemen this year, a first, a third, and a fifth. Obviously Andrew Thomas is going to start right away. But it just gives like another opportunity for some of the other guys to step up. So I just think Solder, it doesn't strike me as a big loss. I guess he has experience, but ever since he joined the team for big bucks, like the line has not been good at all. So I think it's very minor.
Yeah. I think you're probably right about that. CJ Mosley for the Jets. After the Jamal Adams trade, then you lose Mosley too. That hurts.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think he barely played last year, right? Because of an injury. So they haven't really had him. He signed a big deal, and they haven't really gotten anything out of him.
Yeah, they haven't, but they need to get.
Last year he played two games. And so he's really hasn't played for the Jets. That's it. He's played two games for the Jets, and that's all.
No one wants to play for the Jets.
I mean, honestly, like, the Jets is rock bottom. It's like if you have a drug problem and then you find out, like, oh, I've really done it now. Like, it's rock bottom. And then you quit. I think playing for the Jets is the equivalent of that for the NFL.
I was going to say that's worse. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, it's worse.
Gotcha. All right. So that's a loss for them, but they're already kind of in bad shape anyways there. Damian Williams, we spent plenty of time talking about that already. Clyde Edwards-Helaire went fifth overall in my most recent draft, the flex league that I'm in with the Jake Seeley League, best ball league. After I took Zeke at four, he went ahead of, you know, Dalvin Cook, ahead of Michael Thomas. This is not the first time, and he's probably gone higher in some places too.
Yeah, yeah.
So, just that's another one there. Marquise Lee, we talked about him a little bit already. He could have won a starting job with the Pats. Now he won't.
Yeah, he could have. I mean, he was a long shot, but he's a guy, it's just so funny. I never watched college football, and I went to that Andrew Luck Stanford USC game that was like so epic. Mm-hmm. And Marquise Lee, and I think it was it Matt Barkley there? I can't remember who was playing for the USC the QB, but I think it was Matt Barkley, and it was like an epic, epic game between the two of them. And Marquise Lee, I think, was a freshman then, and he was really good. I was like, "Who's that guy? Number 9 or whatever his number?" He was like moving. He was just so quick, and I just remembered, like, since I never watched college on TV or in person, I was like, I want to remember that guy when he gets to the NFL. Ended up being a second round pick, and I was always draft him late, and he had like one all right year where he caught like 80 passes, but never really made it.
Yeah, I mean, the Pats are just a fantasy wasteland this year. Is there a team that a worst fantasy offense team this year?
Not really, no. I can't think of one because, like, you know, even the Redskins have – oh, I shouldn't say that. The Washington football team, Bullets, I'll call them, have you know, Terry McLaurin and people like Geis, people even like Steve Sims. So the Pats, it's like, who do they have? It's like they have – you know, Edelman could catch 80 passes, but I don't trust that. Newton is the only guy I'm interested in the Pats.
Yeah. Yeah, you got, I know if Edelman gets extremely discounted, you wouldn't take a chance on him.
I mean, if anyone gets extremely discounted in a full PPR, but Edelman's just kind of like, I just don't see it.
Yeah.
He's 34. I mean, he's on the decline phase, beyond decline phase. He's on the cliff phase already.
He's wide receiver 36, low pick of 98 overall.
Well, what about wide receiver low pick?
That would put him around like Jerry Jeudy, Darius Slayton, Jamison Crowder.
Yeah, I have those guys all way ahead of him. I have Darius Slayton 33, and I have Edelman in full PPR 43.
Yeah, okay. That's pretty darn low. No James White for you? Not even like in a best ball PPR sort of format?
In a worst ball, I think he's great. the thing is... James White is I have him projected pretty high. He's like my 39th running back via projections, 62 catches, which I think he'll probably get, although Newton never, well, he did check down to Christian McCaffrey's rookie year, but for his first 2 years. But James White, the only way James White can be useful for you is in like a zero running back situation where you're so loaded everywhere else and you stumble upon one good starting running back. And then James White is your second starting running back, and he gets you like 10 PPR points a week, and he just sort of like doesn't give you a zero. But you know James White ends up at 39 among running backs, but you look at the guys behind him on the projections, and it's like Latavius Murray's 44, Tony Pollard's 46, Zach Moss is 48. Like those guys, if the starter gets hurt for like a three game, like last year, Alvin Kamara missed a couple of games and Latavius Murray went crazy for those two games. And he like won me 2 weeks and I made the playoffs in the league because I had Latavius Murray because it was the difference. Mm-hmm. And James White just can't do that for you. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. I think you're right. I mean, James White can have that one huge game, but you just never know what's going to happen. But what say Sony Michel like has another setback. He's out for the year.
Damon Harris or Rex Burkhead or
still too many people there. Too many mouths to feed.
Those aren't even people. Those are just names on jerseys. Those aren't like, oh, but they have this amazing guy. That's just, these are guys that are not even giving. Burkhead's like 30 something and journeyman. And Harris is just a guy they never give a chance to. So we don't even know. We don't even know if they like him. They might even bring in someone else for all we know. But I just don't see James White getting 150 carries, even if Sonny Michel, you know, dropped off the face of the earth.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. What do you think about Sonny Michel? How low are you on him compared to the crowd? Are you way below him?
I don't know where the crowd is, but I moved him to 45, moved him down because, I mean, I guess I shouldn't overreact to the PUP because preseason PUP means nothing. It's just, you know, it just means like he's not recovered yet. But he had surgery in May. He's had knee problems, you know, for a long time. This is a foot problem. And he's not even that good. You know, he had 3.7 yards per carry last year. He's just like an okay guy. He doesn't catch passes. I think Cam might end up being their goal line back, Watch like Stidham get the job and Michelle leads the NFL in touchdowns with like 17. It's possible. Yeah. But I would think that my feeling is that Cam might be the goal line back and then Michelle may get like 5 touchdowns and like, you know, 800 yards or something.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. All right. Damian Harris, worth a late pickup?
Sure. He may as well.
Yeah. I actually kind of like it because, you know, they invest the draft capital in him. Sony Michel's banged up. What if they do become like a better running team? They, you know, Cam opens up some running lanes, or Stidham for that matter, I guess. And Harris is the guy that steps in. They go with the younger, you know, 1 year younger guy. If Michel can't go out, it's funny. Sony Michel's not old, but, you know, but it's the mileage, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I could see that as like, okay, second half of the season, you've got an option.
Yeah. Now, it could happen. But it's like they gave him 4 carries last year. I mean, they did not. It's kind of like Daryl Henderson, but even worse. It's like a team used a 3rd-round pick on a guy, had an opportunity because Michelle was banged up, mm-hmm. and just decided not to use him. I mean, that's just – and the Patriots, like, they look at draft picks as sunk costs, right? They're not like, oh, we have him – I don't think they think twice about it. Deion Lewis was like a guy they got for nothing. He played a lot. And then they had guys like Aaron Dobson and someone else. I can't remember. They had all these receivers they took really high and then didn't even use them.
Yeah, that's right. And I wonder, though, is this a Brady thing? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, it could be Brady. But, I mean, the running back, I guess, you know, miss a bit blitz pickup and you're in the doghouse. But.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, Belichick's the boss, you know, Brady's just, you know, I can't see him like telling Belichick who to put on the field.
Yeah. I think you're probably right about that. I wouldn't want, it's not ideal, but that's, you know, we'll see if it's a Belichick thing or a Brady thing. A lot of things. Well, here's the thing. I know this won't be a thing where like, oh yeah, we're going to see who is successful for their, you know, responsible for their success because A, it's a 43-year-old Brady. It's not really a fair test. B, there's other personnel differences there too. You can't really say, oh, well, it was all along. You could see it was Brady. Well, you could see it was Brady when he was in his 30s or you could, you know, with this personnel. But you know, I think it's kind of like one of those unfair tests.
Well, it's definitely more unfair to Brady because, well, he's got good personnel, but you know, coaches don't really, I mean, eventually they age out of it. The game passes them by, but you can be 65, 70. And as long as your mind is sharp, you could be at your peak as a coach. Whereas like the QB is going to not, you know, Brady's never going to be his peak again, not even close. So it's not really fair. It's peak Belichick versus trough Brady is not a fair comparison. So that's the other thing. It's like, we'll see. Yeah, I would like to see the Bucs be good. I think it would be exciting if Brady pulled the Joe Montana when he went to the Chiefs and it was like, holy crap, this guy's still really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to see that. I mean, it would be awesome. It would be awesome to see that. All right, let's move on. Before we do that, though, a quick note from our friends at FanDraft. You can take your league's fantasy football draft to the next level with FanDraft, the online fantasy football draft board. FanDraft makes your draft feel like the actual NFL draft with features such as a streaming ticker, live draft clock, the Vikings missing their pick, custom logos with team walk-up songs, multiple draft board displays, and more. No, just kidding. There won't be multiple draft board displays. Yeah, there will be, but there won't be any Vikings missing picks. FanDraft can be used offline for in-person drafts by exporting the display via projector or onto a large screen TV for the league to enjoy. It can also be used fully online, and any number of your league owners can join the draft remotely. You can perform both traditional and auction-style drafts. FanDraft also supports IDPs, rookie-only drafts, keepers, and just about any customization to meet your league requirements. You can sign up for a free trial account at FanDraft.com. When you're ready to order the pro account, make sure to use promo code ROTOPOD15 to save 15% off your purchase. Again, that's fandraft.com and use promo code ROTOPOD15 to save 15%. You know, Chris, going back to the NFL draft, I'm surprised there weren't more glitches than there were. And the stuff that were glitches weren't really glitches so much as they were like character things, like, you know, like Goodell slumping over in his chair to announce one pick, or like the, you know, CeeDee Lamb grabbing the phone away from his girlfriend, or like the other, the mom dragging the girlfriend off the player when he got announced as the first round pick. Those weren't really glitches. These were just like kind of character. Otherwise,
right. Reality show events.
Yeah, but like there weren't like that. There wasn't the hacking. There wasn't the, you know, can you hear me? We can't get our draft pick in or anything like that. No, it went pretty smoothly. I was really surprised.
Hacking would be so awesome. You hacked in and took like, you know, you had the Jets take a quarterback. That's what I should have done. I should have studied my whole life to be a hacker just so I could have the Jets draft a quarterback, shockingly.
Life goals.
What a great life goal.
Yeah,
it was fine. I mean, it's easy, dude. I mean, the NFBC can do it. The NFFC can do it for
right.
them. I mean, it's easy. I mean, this is a multi-billion dollar organization. Like, they should be able to just pull that off. And, yeah, you'd think, like, you know, they make fun of Gettleman with his one laptop. But even, you know, it's so easy. Anybody can do a draft online. It's just an online draft is all it is.
Yeah, that's right. And the thing is, like, yeah, we just all wanted to see it. It's like, oh, Gettleman, he's such a Luddite. Look at those notebooks, you know, and all that, you know.
People can crap on Gettleman. I'm not saying he's good. He's done some things well, and he's done some stupid things. But that whole meme to me is like, really? You see a guy with some notebooks, and you see a guy with a bunch of flat screens, and you're like, ooh, flat screens. He's got to be the better GM. To me, that is not giving me any information about who's the better GM at all, or who's the better talent evaluator.
Sure. Of course not. You know, and there's a lot of that that is like, and we just want to see it. I'll be honest. I wanted to see a glitch. I thought it would be hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I was rooting for.
Train wreck is what you're rooting for.
Yeah. Well, that's the Bengals season every year. So I wanted to see it happen to somebody else.
Yeah.
Of course, train wrecks still do happen. But, you know, they still, there's always screw-ups that you do see all the time. All right. I want to get into the meat of the matter here. Guys that have changed, you know, whether, you know, it's not ADP changes, but it's your changes. You've done the rankings. You're doing another set. You're doing the snarky 150 right now, which forces you to look at rankings again.
Yeah. I did move some guys based on that. Just like, I'd rather have this guy than that guy. You know, that kind of thing happens.
And you've also done some drafts, a couple of drafts, including one of your beat Chris Liss's already. And all of those things kind of force you to reevaluate and say, okay, is this how I really feel? Now that I'm in a draft and I see that this guy is hanging here, do I really want to take him? Or the other way around, oh, where is he on my rankings? He went and I'm nowhere near on him. I got to change it. Do you have any of those sort of guys? Let's go with the first type first. Guys that you've moved down, whether it's because you didn't want to take him in a draft or you've reconsidered looking at him. You're like, I don't know if I really like him here.
Yeah, a couple guys. Like Robert Woods was one of them that I moved down. I just think he's a low ceiling type of guy. Cortland Sutton, I just don't love the situation for him, even though he's a good player. I have him at 19. Maybe that's close to market. I moved T.Y. Hilton down. It's a minor hamstring injury, but his age and calf, I just was like, this is not great. I moved Marquise Brown up recently because he's now playing in the 180s, which is different. We talked about that on XM. Mm-hmm. I've moved a couple guys like that, you know, around. I was going to move Will Fuller up more, but I have him at 46, and I'm probably the low man on him.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, he's the Buxton of the NFL. Like, you just can't count on it. And the NFL is so much rougher, you know. You just can't count on it. I think, like, there's certain guys when they get hurt, you're not like, ah, that's such bad luck. You're like, yeah. When Buxton got hurt before the season, it's amazing they only missed a couple games. People are like, I told you, dude. Why don't you ever learn? And, like, it's annoying, obviously, after the fact.
Right.
But I'm also like, yeah, they're kind of right. Like, what am I doing? Like, why do I keep thinking it's just bad luck? And I feel like with Will Fuller, there's a couple of guys, a lot of guys, it is bad luck. And you have to just say, okay, this might be a value. This guy, he happens to have gotten hurt a couple of years, but he's healthy now. But with certain players, like, man, so Fuller's a guy I'm kind of low on.
The worst thing about Fuller is, too, it's like he'll have this great matchup and he gets hurt in the first quarter, or he just doesn't get the targets. Like they actually get ahead, and so they decide they're going to run the ball more or something like that.
Hopkins is gone. I mean, that's big. You know, the hog is gone.
That's true. That is true. But, you know, seeing him like go off on your bench and then get hurt while you have him active, the whipsaw. To me, he's like Ryan Braun.
you know, for me, I never end up drafting Ryan Braun because that I always time the market wrong with him. I get tired of it. And it's always like day to day sort of stuff. You know, that's the thing that's too, it's a killer. Well, it's Fuller, already happened again this year.
But Fuller's courteous enough to, you know, be out for multiple weeks, if not the whole season. So he doesn't put you in that position.
Yeah, but he's had like the muscle pulls and things like that, which just, you know, he's questionable into a given week and then he'll play or then won't play then when he's probable the next or something like that. You know, it just, it feels like that's the case. And I feel like Braun's the same way.
Yeah, Braun's been like that for the last 6 years. Yes. One guy I've moved up is Gronk. I moved him all the way to six. Yeah. He's 31 years old. He retired for a year because he got such a bad hit in that Super Bowl that it like gave him like internal bleeding or something. It was like really damaged himself. And he just took a year to get healthy. And he's 31, man. I mean, tight ends at 34, 35, Gates, Gonzalez, those guys were crushing it at those ages.
Yeah.
He's the greatest tight end of all time. He's 31 years old. He's going to be starting. I don't know how many snaps he's going to see necessarily, but he's going to be mostly being as a receiver, being used as a receiver. Hard for me not to like him in that situation. It's another guy I moved up. So it's just a few. I mean, most of my stuff isn't that far off ADP. Mm-hmm. I kind of like Mark Ingram better and J.K. Dobbins worse as it's gone on. I moved down Cam Akers from like 22 to 27. I'm starting to move up Darrell Henderson to 34. Even though Darrell Henderson was like the Damian Harris, like totally neglected third round pick. Starting to think they talked about a committee, and Darrell Henderson's really quick. Even the few plays that I saw him play last year, the guy just hits the hole fast.
Yes, he does. And
I was like, you know, if it's a committee and they kind of take turns, you know, Darrell Henderson might just blow up, you know? So I kind of like him. I like Kareem Hunt a little better. I think it's great to be able to have that, the backup in a top, what should be a top running offense now that the offensive line is so much better in Cleveland, who also is playable while he's your backup. That's right. Like ideal.
Yeah, and he is the first backup that gets taken, though, right? Right. He gets drafted at the same spot as some team's starters.
Right.
So you really have to commit to him.
I have Hunt at 30, Dobbins at 31, and the next backup I have is Darrell Henderson at 34. So that's – Because these aren't backups. Hunt is a backup kind of, but he's got his own role. But Dobbins and Darrell Henderson, they're backups, but they're also potential starters, even if they might just outplay the starter, basically.
Rank the rookie running backs for me. I'm in a league where we do, you know, just rookies or guys that weren't rostered at the end of the year last year. So Edwards-Helaire has got to be one now that Damian Williams has opted out, right?
Yeah, and Taylor's two.
Taylor two.
And then three, I guess I have Akers, but barely.
Akers ahead of Swift?
No, sorry. Three is Swift.
Okay.
I forgot. Three is Swift. Four is Akers. Five is Dobbins. Six is, I guess it's Keyshawn Vaughn, but I'm getting, when they signed McCoy, that's not good for Keyshawn Vaughn. I may move him down. Seven
is that
is
one
Moss.
Where the positive COVID test is kind of damaging? Because not he's missing not out all these reps?
Not if it's just like a week. You know, I mean, if a lot of these guys, it's like they tested positive because they're testing everybody all the time. 3 days later, they beat it. Or 4 days later, they get a couple negative tests and it's just a blip. So I think it might be like that for a lot of these guys. You never know. Everyone's different genetically. But
Zach Moss or Vaughn? Who do you like better?
I've got Vaughn higher now because I just think that Devin Singletary is more established than Ronald Jones.
Mm-hmm.
But the McCoy signing has me a little nervous. Like, why even bother to sign him if you're sold on Vaughn as your definite other guy? And actually, I kind of like Ronald Jones with the McCoy signing. It's almost like the real threat is held off. But Zach Moss, I'm higher on Singletary than some. I think he's the clear starter, but Zach Moss has a chance. Then Antonio Gibson, then Anthony McFarland, then A.J. Dillon. That's probably far enough.
Would Dillon go higher in a dynasty?
I guess. I mean, yeah, Aaron Jones is due to leave. A.J. Dillon's been compared to Derrick Henry. But, you know, the odds that A.J. Dillon is really as good as Derrick Henry, it's probably, what, like 15-20% when you get a rookie who's got the physical specs and you compare him to a guy who's smashing the league with the same physical specs. It's like, it's pretty slim.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah, the Dillon draft pick was interesting just because of – you know, the Packers having two other running backs, needing wide receivers.
taking a quarterback in the first round, that they did all of that. I mean, that's pretty wild that they still went with Dylan with an early pick.
It's just bizarre. I mean, you have the running back is not their problem. Jamal Williams is an adequate backup. You don't even need depth. So you're totally fine at running back, and you either get rid of Rodgers or you're all in with Rodgers until you get rid of him. And so both picks, you had a team that was 13-3. They didn't deserve to be, but still, I mean, they got it done. And instead of, you know, getting that last piece for a Super Bowl push, they did get Devin Funchess, who opted out. But instead of getting that last piece for a Super Bowl push, they just drafted for the future while the present was still here. It just, man, there's nothing wrong with having a little bit of overlap between the present and the future, but that seems like way too much overlap. We're not even sure Rodgers is done after this year for the Packers.
Right. That's right. I think he signed for like 4 years, right?
Well, I mean, they would just release him if he had a bad year, and I don't know what the cap it is, but
yeah. And they've said all these quotes like, oh, we expect Aaron to be there from the future. And now they kind of have to say that. So I get it.
Of course they say that. Yeah. It's just, these teams are, I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, if Love ends up being the next Rodgers and Rodgers is the next Favre, you know, like great peak and then faded a bit, then everyone will say that was genius. You know, they got the guy they needed to get, but it's really interesting because this happens in fantasy drafts, real life, everything. It's like, we know two things. One, we know that like we who have experience picking players, evaluating talent, you need to have conviction in your observations. So if you see a quarterback or somebody that you think could be really good, you got to pounce and take him. But the flip side of that is, you know, that nobody has it's very hard, very difficult to reliably be better than the crowd, an educated, informed crowd at doing that. Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, you take Jordan Love because you're like, I know this guy's going to be good and I trust myself. And on the other hand, you're like, how the hell would I know? Nobody knows if these guys are going to be good. It's not a need pick. Get something that's going to win the Super Bowl. And that is an impossible thing to resolve because you can always criticize people for making a pick like that. But if it works out, then, you know, then you never would have got it if you just played it by the book. So, you know, it's one of those things where we're going to grade it on results, and we have to, because the process is not really, you can't really evaluate it without the results.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. All right. One more note from our sponsors, our friends at Otternew. Otternew Fantasy Football lets you build your fantasy football dynasty like a real GM. It's better fantasy football, auction-based, deep rosters, and college player prospects. Stash the next rookie of the year while he's still tearing up Saturdays. Trade for superstars to make a championship push. Develop a team over multiple years. Play against the best fantasy football competition on the internet. Visit OTTONEU.com today, our good friends at Otternew. So some of that dynasty talk would come in handy. Maybe you could go get your own Jordan Love there. Any wide receivers on the move for you in your rankings, up positive or negative? We talked about Fuller a little bit. Anyone moving down there, you're like, I just don't want to take him here.
I mean, I moved Allen Robinson up earlier draft season. I just started to think, like, this guy's going to get league-leading type of targets. You have Anthony Miller there, who's been hurt a lot, and that's it. Maybe Tariq Cohen. It is a narrow tree. And Allen Robinson, the Bears defense isn't going to be that good. I think Allen Robinson is going to get a lot of targets. Yeah, and then, you know, Galladay, I moved him ahead of Galladay. I have Galladay at 9, and I know he goes earlier than that, and he's great on a per-play basis, but I'm tempted to move up DJ Chark from 12 to 9 maybe, because just the talent and the opportunity should be there. Thielen, I don't like that he had a hamstring injury and he's 30. So he's a little bit older and he had a soft tissue injury, but just like Robinson, he could get 160 targets like easily. And that's just hard to pass up. Other guys, Calvin Ridley's growing on me a little bit. You got Hayden Hurst, Julio Jones, and Ridley, maybe Russell Gage, but it's a pretty thin tree on a very high volume passing attack. I mean, very high volume. And they don't really, you know, their running game, let's see if Todd Gurley holds up. But, you know, I think Ridley is just locked into his stats. Like, you take Ridley, like, you're just going to, if he's healthy, you're just going to get such a nice floor.
Yeah, I think you will, too. I really like that one. Tough one that I find, tough for me is now all three Cowboys wide receivers. How high do you take him? Because you know, yes, CeeDee Lamb, you know, takes away some of the target volume for both Gallup and Cooper, but they're not going to get, it doesn't take them to zero either. And, you know, you don't want someone else to get a windfall. Cooper's still a really good receiver. Gallup's still a really good receiver.
Yeah. I mean, Gallup had a lot of drops and he still was really efficient. The Cowboys, you know, McCarthy, remember McCarthy threw a ton in the red zone with Rodgers, and Prescott is a pretty good quarterback and they never threw in the red zone last year. So Cooper got 8 touchdowns, but with like 9 red zone targets, like nothing inside the 10. And if McCarthy starts throwing inside the 10, you know, Cooper could get 10 touchdowns. I mean, I project him for 8 because it's can't do much more than that, but they throw a lot, the Cowboys, and I don't know. It is hard with those three guys, but remember CeeDee Lamb comes in and replaces Randall Cobb's 83 targets. And then Witten left and he had like 50 targets. So you're talking about 133 targets are gone. Jarwin will get some, but I think, you know, Cooper and Gallup are going to retain their target share, I think.
Yeah. I think they'll get pretty close to that too. So yeah. And I wouldn't mind, throwing out, you know, I wouldn't mind actually getting Lamb in a dynasty league too. I mean, I think that, you know, his talent is off the wall. It's still really ridiculously good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see. I mean, what, you know, Judy, Lamb were considered sort of the best talents in the draft and no one knew who was going first, and Lamb kind of fell where he did. And maybe he's just so good that like, it's one of those things where year one, he's the number one guy right away. Mm-hmm. And Cooper and Gallup are just sort of like battling for that second fiddle. I mean, it could be. It's not like the team's going to say, oh, no, you can't do it. It's just that he's coming in with no offseason.
Right.
And you've got two good guys. I mean, you know, the thing that kind of reminds me of, although Lamb's not this good, is the Vikings that year in 98. They had Jake Reed and Chris Carter, two Pro Bowlers, and their third receiver was this rookie Randy Moss.
Right, right.
And he didn't get that many snaps at first. And then he ended up with 17 touchdowns and like 10 pass interferences drawn down the field.
Right.
I mean, he was just like, okay,
it's the football version of Mike Trout. You know?
Yeah, it's just like this guy's so good that, you know, and I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of hype around CeeDee Lamb. I don't know if that's, you know, I'm not a college football guy, so you might know better than me, like whether it's like, you know, they're going to use Lamb as a punt returner apparently. Could be, at least like that's not good.
Yeah. It's like, although you don't want, Antonio Brown started off as a punt returner too. You make a play and then,
but it took him a couple of years to get involved. Now Antonio Brown was a 6th round pick and not a 1st round pick, so it's a little different.
Right. That's right. All right. All right. I think that's pretty good. I think that covered what we're looking for. I'm looking forward to seeing the snarky 150 coming up here. What do you think that'll be up on the site?
Maybe tomorrow. It depends if I go to the beach or not with Heather and Sasha. I was supposed to take a surfing lesson, but I said, you know what, I got to be home for the show now, and so I might push that to Friday and just bust this article out tomorrow. Tough life I have.
Yeah, it's a hard knock life for sure.
It is tough.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to thank Dynasty. I want to thank our sponsors. I want to thank Dynasty Owner for sponsoring us all this month. Also, FanDraft and Autonew. We've got Jake and Joe up again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Have a great day.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.